Happy Monday. Katie, Blake, and Ailish on our final hour. Two massive gets for our guests. Our buddy Anthony Stewart, who's been, feels like avoiding us as of late. Haven't had him on for a while. He's been big-leaguing us. Former NFL forward, NHL forward, and current sports and analyst is going to punch me. Stewie, you see me coming for your face swap kingdom with my little graphic with JD. It's not as good as yours.
I didn't see one, but I'm trying to avoid that because I think that's why I'm person non grata on the show because I've been doing too many face swaps.
Right.
JD's actually came to my house, I think, and said, hey, buddy, you need to stop that.
You hold the title.
That's what
I would
do. I would confront you in person. That's how I would do it.
I would be
show
cowardly.
Face to face and say, hey, listen, buddy, unless you want trouble, you better back off.
Like, trying to make you look good here. Come on.
Yeah,
roll
no,
that's difficult.
The world's biggest lie. Who has ever brought up told you? Like, I actually, you know what I talked about the other day on the show is your Fight League video because there's this new Fight League thing happening. I can't remember what it's called, but it's obviously going to be trash.
Like Ice Wars, I think.
Who cares?
Ice Wars.
Yeah, Ice Wars. Yeah, there's something called Ice Wars, and it's just fighting on ice, right? Which is that. And I was like, yeah, I referenced Stewie being in that league and that guy getting beat so hellaciously by you that they had to bring the whole squad to the parking lot and be like, hey, buddy, so you got to quit this league. Otherwise, there's going to be off-ice wars.
I'll tell you quickly about that. That is like, that league is like prison because before I fought that guy, everyone would be all over me. Oh, fresh meat, NHL, NHL. Like, and then when I did that, I got so much respect where they're like, we got to watch out for this guy. Don't hurt us.
But my favorite part of the video is just how in control you are of that guy. You know, like everything is just like there's people use the term ragdolling way too liberally after watching that video. It's like, no, that's literally what a ragdolling is. It's like this guy is getting tossed around and you're just puppeting him. You're like, I want you to go over here and you pull him over there. And then you're like, and now I want you to come over here and you pull him over there. It's one of my favorite videos of all time. Shout out to Sam McKee who found it and showed it to me and where we watched it, I think, four times in a row, just cackling the entire way. But then also looking at you differently, where I was like, oh, can I get you coffee, sir? Like, that was very much
you better
the rest
touch
of the way.
My jacket again. Don't touch my
jacket.
Oh,
yeah. No, exactly. Oh, man. That jacket fit me like a glove. What a fit. What a fit. That was a really good look for me. So, boy, let's start with this, man. I got pretty pissed off at Sheldon Keefe. You put Abbruzzese up on the top line with Matthews. The guy's hunting 60 goals. Like, why do we have to diminish it to this degree?
Well, it's funny. We were talking about in the pregame show yesterday, and Elliot mentioned that Abbruzzese was getting, he was getting promoted up to that top line. And I said, well, how many is it going to be shifts or games? And he looked at me and he said games, but he knew it was going to be shifts, right? So I think what they need to do, they need to start looking to see what they have in their cupboards and some of these prospects, right? Because you're looking at it right now at their lineup. You know, who's really going to step in now? You know, Mikheyev may be out next year. Kerfoot's more of a middle six top guy. So who do they have in their system that they can promote and play in a top six? Because they're going to need that because you cannot keep hitting on these free agents coming in playing in the top six. So, you know, for being not really a game with that much implications, I'd like to see a guy get a full game or a full segment to really show what he can do. So, you know, for me, I think the guy is Mikheyev. And you saw what happened yesterday when that game was done. We were writing our obituary on that game, you know, ready to chirp this and that. But, you know, he stepped up and made a big, big play. And he's one of those players now that's creating his own offense. He's similar to Bunting where he gets in on the forechecks, hunts pucks, turns them over, makes plays. And he's added a physical element to his game. So I'd like to really see Mikheyev get more than a couple shifts or, you know, a couple games to really show what he can do because I think he's one of the players that earned it right now.
Did you not think that it was, and JD brought this point up, that it was a little bit maybe disrespectful to the Matthews situation, not only because he's going for 60, but like also you want your top line to be firing, feeling confident going into the playoffs. He's now been a couple games in a row. It's his biggest slump of the season without scoring. Are you thinking that that's important at all? Or is it, hey, let's take a look at our rookies for next year? Like, how do you balance that?
Well, it's very important for the players, I'll tell you that. But, you know, coming from playing on some teams and for some coaches, like, I think some of them, they probably don't even care. With what's riding on this season and the implications of them getting past the first round this season, I don't think they're really worried about Austin Matthews scoring six, you know, getting 60. And I know it's a big, big deal. If I was his teammate, I'd be throwing him no-look passes trying to get him 60. But I think with Keefe and Coe, they're so worried about, you know, they need to get past this first round and, you know, playing proper defense, you know, having proper discipline, getting the proper lineups and matchups. I think they're more focused on that. And, you know, Matthews missed three games, so I'm trying to think if he's really focused on that as well, too. So I know it's a big, big deal to the players, but, you know, you can tell right now by just sort of some of the lineups that they're like, yeah, if he gets it, that's great. If not, you know, we got bigger fish to fry.
See, I hate that. That's what I have the biggest issue with, is it's like, dude, they threw up that graphic last night and reminded everybody that Alex Ovechkin, the greatest goal scorer who ever lived, had one 60-goal season in his career. Like, mm-hmm. we're all kind of assuming that this is going to be the regular for Matthews or the norm for Matthews, and maybe, like, again, there's people saying that he'll score 70, they'll do whatever, but I still think back to that Stamkos quote, and I know Stamkos, I think anyways was doing a little bit of head games with Matthews because he didn't want him to score 60. He goes, if you don't hit 60, it's going to haunt you. I like that the organization, I really do, I like that the organization handled the Matthews injury the way that they did, where they go, we're going to sit you for three games, and the goal of this season is to win the cup. It's not for individual success. But when you start to put the college kid up on the top line with me, that's where you've taken it too far. I want somebody who can actually create and take a little bit of attention. Like, all due respect to Abruzzese, who is a good player, I don't think he's going to have an NHL career. I don't think that the priority of the organization should be, let's take a look at what he could be for next year. Like, figure that out some other way. I don't need to see you taking that time from Matthews. And if you want him going right at the right time, then guess what? Give him minutes with someone that could actually play there. You know how many injuries they'd have to have for Abruzzese to get up on the Matthews top line in a playoff game? Like, literally, Stewie, you're penning in before Abruzzese is. Like, they're saying, come on, Stewie, we saw the Sportsnet lineup. We're putting it out there. I don't know why they're so afraid of him scoring 60 at this point, or the look of him getting 60 is important to them whatsoever. Like, I think two things can be true, and Keith preached this entire season about individual success breeds team success, and now to kind of deviate from that message last minute, that it's bad omen to me. Bad omen.
Yeah, but I'm looking at it right now. Say, you know, from a betting standpoint, say you have your life savings on the big, big game, whatever that game may be. Mm-hmm. You're focused on that. You're not focused on the little bets or the parlay bets or anything. So I look at it from that perspective, where there's a lot riding on this season and it's team success. And, you know, I can understand if Matthews is coming up for a contract next year and all that. But remember, this group now, they're all paid. And the individual accolades, it's not really about that right now. It's about the legacy. And I think players like Matthews, he wants to win so much where, you know, he's even willing to sacrifice that, because I've known guys that played with, you know, broken foots, broken wrists, because they wanted to stay in the lineup that bad. So for him to take those three games off for, you know, a minor injury, that just shows, you know, where his head's at, that he's more worried about getting ready and being 100% for the playoffs as opposed to hitting 60. So I can admire that. It's very mature of him. But I can understand it from the fan standpoint, where you want something to brag about, because if it doesn't go the way that Leafs fans want, they can at least say, well, you know, at least Austin Matthews scored 60, you know, something that's only been done five times in the last, 25 years.
So load management, we saw Tavares take some time off, rest himself up. With that, though, we've had the conversation about who should be playing with him when the lines are back on the right-hand side. You know, things have kind of been up and down. We've seen at least Nylander be that puzzle piece that fits in with a lot of places. But if you're looking at, hey, a playoff picture, who slots in there on the wing?
Well, I think it should be Nylander. You know, you saw what he did in the playoffs last year. And again, I know they want to see more intensity and more robust and more truculence. But, you know, this is a big, big season. You have to go with your horses and say what you want. And I always look at the criticism and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I believe it. He needs to do more. But, you know, I'm looking at his stats right now. He's almost at a point a game. He's got 30 goals and 76 points. And, you know, I always go back to that LA Kings team, which I was a part of, you know, just very, very briefly. And they had some really, really, you know, not really good players. They were very average. But what Lombardi did and Sutter did is they had them playing with players that complemented their style. So if it was a stay-at-home defenseman or defenseman that couldn't skate, they put him with a fleet-footed guy that can sort of, you know, keep it up. Same thing with the wingers and the centers. So regardless of what Nylander's flaws are, this guy puts up points. So you need to put him with a guy that's going to complement him, or that's going to, you know, go in and fish pucks out. So I like that. And You know, JD's not going to hear this one. Kerfoot has been the most underrated Toronto Maple Leaf the whole entire season. You saw the game on the line last night in the shootout. He made it look like he should have been shooting third to win the game. I like his game this year.
The first time he shot all season.
He's been Mr. Utility. He's been a Swiss Army knife. I've heard that term. I really, really like his game, and you need Kerfoot's 51 points. If you thought, if you asked JD, be like, yeah, you know, he's got 5 goals and 12 assists, and, we need to get someone out there. But, again, he's been playing great. So I'd keep that line back together and getting Kerfoot and Nylander back when Tavares comes.
Nicest goal he scored since he banged one in on his own net the other night. Okay. That's the
nicest goal.
Yeah, no, I'm not actually. I think the issue here for me is that I like Nylander and Kerfoot together, and I like Engvall. Like, that group has been solid for me, and I like the idea of having three lines that you can roll out in the postseason. Like, I'm struggling between what you actually want to do here, whether you spread the love or whether you try to put Nylander back with a line where he hasn't had a ton of success throughout the regular season. Like, no, the debate is not whether Nylander is good. Like, it's whether Nylander is best suited with Tavares. And from a minute standpoint, the way you'd like to lock it up is to have that clear and front runner top six. But I don't know. I'm kind of the mind that maybe you give Kasha a look next to Tavares if he can get back healthy, and then you keep that Nylander line as is, and you just keep doing what Sheldon Keefe has done, which is you get offensive zone faceoffs and obviously power play time, and you try to bump Nylander up the lineup for a few minutes and give him a look with more talented players in flexible offensive spots. I think Kerfoot's been good, but I think he's best with Nylander, and I don't really like him as a winger with Tavares, because that Mikheyev, Tavares, Kerfoot line is very non-threatening offensively, and I just don't think that there's anybody that's like setting the table for anybody on that line.
Yeah, but I think with Nylander right now, you got to worry. You can't be playing mind games with this guy, right? And I understand if I'm him right now, I'm like, I don't care who I play with as long as I'm on the first line power play and I get to put up my cookies. And, you know, with Engvall, you know, you see the speed and you see, you know, him making plays, but it's funny. He almost reminds me of Jesse Puljujärvi, where, you know, I was actually in Edmonton watching their game against Vegas last week. And the one thing that I picked up that the cameras don't pick up is, you know, McDavid would make a pass or Kane would make a pass to him and he'd bobble it or he'd mishandle it or he wouldn't make that super elite play. And you look at Kane and McDavid and they're literally like shaking their head like, this guy's serious again. They were doing that all game where, yeah, he's a good fit, you know, I guess for a little bit. But when the game's on the line, you want that guy that, you know, when that pass is coming across, it's going in the net. And I think with Engvall, he's more suited for that bottom six as opposed to top six, because he doesn't make that big play, you know, at the right time.
So we got two more games the regular season, the Red Wings and the Bruins. But there's like, I think as of 2 days ago, like a 44% chance that they might play the Bruins, a 55% chance they might play Tampa. That might have been updated, but you're looking at who you'd want in a matchup for the Leafs in terms of favoring Toronto. Who's that for you?
Well, if I'm them, I'm like, I don't care if I play the Monstars. We got to win. We got to, you know, get the Russian gas or do something. We got to win this game, the series here. And you watch that Tampa game, and I'm not looking at the score, and I'm just looking at the two goals that Washington scored, the second and the third goal to go up 3-1. And just the misreads, right, where the D are coming up to support and they're not recovering back to the middle, where Tampa Bay, they exploit teams, you know, below the dots, like any team, better than any team in the National Hockey League. So I'd be worried about the defensive zone coverage playing against a team like Tampa, because they're great at puck retrievals. They're getting great at getting the puck from low to high, and they can really, really exploit a defense. So I would try to I'd rather play Boston, because if you beat them, you don't have to hear about that for the next 12 years. So I think Boston, they match up probably a little bit better. But if I'm them, you can't think about that, and you can't really try to adjust your lineups to try to get a better seeding, because hockey karma will catch up to you.
Anybody who says Tampa over Boston is dumb. Like, straight up. There's no, like, it's just the dumbest. Like, I can't believe we're even having the debate. Like, it's like, yeah, a ghost can be real and things can get between the ears. But, yeah, we just saw what Tampa Bay looks like when they're firing all cylinders. They just won 2 Stanley Cups in a row. Like, Boston didn't do those. So
Mike Tyson's almost 60 years old. And, yeah, I still would not try to challenge Mike Tyson, because there's a chance he could still knock you out.
don't piss Mike Tyson off on a flight. If you're on a plane and you see Mike Tyson, give him the tip of the cap and say, hey, yeah, congrats, sir, on a great career. Like, keep it moving down the aisle. Don't sit down behind him. Okay, last one for me, Stewie. What do you think happens with Muzzin?
Well, he comes in. You know, the NHL is all about respect. But, you know, the one player I think is safe, he's been playing great, is Liljegren. And the one thing I noticed about his game, we're talking about those lapses in the D zone. He's recovering a lot better to the middle. He's not getting out muscle. He looked like he put on 10 pounds. I don't know what that is. Maybe he's, you know, going to Harbor 60s and getting the porterhouse. But he's looking great. You know, I saw him moving through the neutral zone. I'm like, who is that? That's not Liljegren. This guy looks like a 5-6 year veteran. So I really like the evolution of Liljegren right now. And I think he's a player that can step up and score a big, big goal. And, you know, I'm seeing him out there in overtime and on the second unit power play making some plays. So I really, really like Liljegren, but you know, it comes down to defense and, you know, those guys that can clear the net and keep it simple. So like I said before, yeah, he's not the fleetest of foot muzzin, but you have to pair him with a guy that's going to recover for him and it's going to support him and help him. But you know, he's a guy that's got the pedigree, he's won the Stanley Cup. I know he's had some injury problems, but you got to give him a shot because you're better with him in the lineup than without him, with him out in the lineup. Sorry.
Anthony Stewart coming around on Timothy Liljegren. Jocks and nerds getting along. Finally, shaking hands. It's me and you against JD and Ailish now is how we'll frame these ones moving forward. Anthony Stewart, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, buddy.
Thanks a lot. Go Leafs, go.
See you, bud.
Anthony Stewart, former NHL forward, current Sportsnet analyst. And, my tag team partner against you two because he's on the low. You're going to train.
He's getting wrecked.
Obviously he's on the opposite side of JD. And then you're trying to steal his gimmick with the worst face swaps anyone's ever seen. And yeah,
he's on the same side as me. I've been trumpeting Liljegren now for like a month and a half saying that.
Dragged you there kicking and screaming like sure, Stewie dragged that guy in that Quebec fight. pulling you by
have
the
you guys
jersey
watched that yet?
Collar.
No, yeah, send me the link later.
It. No, it's no. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'll send it to you right now.
Liljegren has been obviously clear as day good since he's joined with Mark Giordano. And I know that the numbers reflect whatever. He and Morgan Rielly were the greatest tandem since we had Niedermeyer-Pronger, according to the nerds. But no, it wasn't that way. And he's right. He's been playing bigger. He's been playing with more confidence. And he's looked good. And I don't think that anybody has jumped him in the lineup right now. And I know that Sheldon Keefe really trusts Justin Hall. And I think Hall has been better than people say he is. Again, he's the ultimate confirmation bias guy right now, where people want to kick him while he's down and when he makes mistakes, and then they won't acknowledge anything else he does. I don't see how Muzzin fits in right now. Like, to me, you're rolling into the playoffs, your lines are set, you're not screwing with anything. And if you need to make an adjustment, you bring him in. But if we're talking about respect as being a reason why a guy gets in the lineup right now, then that's a problem for me, because he just said it. You need to win. If it's the Monstars, who cares? You need to win. That means you ice your best lineup. And right now, your best lineup just, I'm sorry, it doesn't include Jake Muzzin, not the way that he's looked.
And I mean, sure, respect to Jake Muzzin, but what does it show the other six if they've been better than him and one of them gets bumped? That's not respect there. And like, I don't know. The toughest thing is, and the toughest part of Muzzin not playing in any of these games, other than the mysterious nature of the injury, is like, what do you even do with him? Like, Muzzin Hall, we're done with. We're not going back to Muzzin Hall. You could put him with Brody because Brody can protect someone, but then you're taking away from your top pair, and you're asking Brody to basically, hey, pull Muzzin to capable minutes here. I don't know. I just don't know where you slot him in. He's probably going to have a role in that series at some point.
Well, slot him in for the Lyubushkin thing, because it's funny because I go back and forth on Lyubushkin constantly now, because there really is a physical element to him that you want in the postseason. Like, you really do. Like, every once in a while he shows his strength off and you go, damn, that's impressive.
Career
like
high, 2 goals.
Yeah, one goal is one of the funniest goals.
Elite.
That's the farthest the shot has ever been from actually hitting the net and going in, I guess, the one last night. So, but he's a thumper, man. Like, he really does hit people. And even when he gets his hands on somebody, you see his strength. Like, and why the nickname is Bear is he is freakishly strong. And if you want, that in the playoffs. The problem is that sometimes, and not only in the, defending, going back and trying to defend in space, you see the flaws. And also when he does have the puck on his stick, you go, boy, if he's being pressured, if he's being forechecked and he has the puck, it's a nightmare zone a lot of the times. And it's a reminder of the scouting report we got on him when he first showed up here, which is that the moment can be too big for him at times and he can make mistakes when the puck is on his stick. I have a tough time with it because nobody brings the thump that he brings in the lineup right now. Like, nobody has that, oh, you better keep your head up when he's out on the ice. He might make that. I love guys like that where it's, you want to be at least a little – they're not dirty players, but you want to be aware because a bad thing could happen to you if you don't pay attention. And he's kind of one of those guys. So to me, he's the bubble player now. It's not Liljegren. Liljegren's been too good. I think that he and Gio have been a perfect fit. I think you go back to Riley Barry. And then as of right now, yeah, sorry, Blake, but I actually think that if you bring Muzzin back, I am going back to Muzzin Hall because of the familiarity between the two and hoping that the sheltered minutes can happen because I don't see another option other than that. Like, you're not splitting up Morgan Riley and you're not putting Brody with him. And you're not going to put Liljegren with him. So I don't know what the other options are. I think that that's what they'll end up going back to. Let's take a break. I like how it's, yes, Andre Kasha is the Leafs Masterson Trophy nominee. Blake, how meaningful is this in your career? This means a lot to you. He got the I'm a nice guy nominee. What do you think?
Well, I don't know anything about Andre Kasha as a dude. So, sure, this is great. Nice perseverance, sportsmanship, yeah. Dedication to hockey. I care much more about him getting some weird award the Corsi Monsters come up with or something. I don't know. I don't care.
I couldn't have
told you Oscar Lindblom won it last year.
No, it's the no offense, but it's like somehow even less meaningful than the Lady Bing, which both have zero meaning.
It's one of those ones where, like, if there's a good story, it's a good award. Like, I remember Phil Kessel and Jason Blake both winning it, and obviously those were really great stories.
That's Lindblom last year. He fought cancer.
Yeah, so, like, sometimes there are things like that, and then sometimes it's like, well, Jágr's 45.
Yeah, I don't – yeah, it's nice acknowledgement, but also, yeah, I think that this is a total award for his perseverance in that he gets knocked out once every four games and he keeps coming back. He's literally the Rocky where it's like he's like, I ain't no bell, and he just keeps walking back out there and trying to continue his NHL career. Because, yes, this is like, I don't know about anything else, the sportsmanship with him or whatever, but, yes, the perseverance is definitely a Kasha thing because, again, he gets lit up every single time he tries to play pro hockey, and he keeps on coming back. So shout out to Kasha trying to get this award. Let's take a break. Let's come back, and let's hopefully talk to Blake's buddy, Timmy Bontemps, Timmy Goodtimes. Will he ghost Blake twice in a row, his bestie? Next, we'll find out. Tim Bontemps, NBA writer for ESPN and host of the NBA Stock Report on YouTube. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Give them a follow at their names on their socials. Subscribe to this podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your pods, rate, review, all that good stuff. Please and thank you. More good stuff, Timmy Goodtimes, NBA writer at ESPN, host of the NBA Stock Report on YouTube, and has woke up on time today. Tim Bontemps, what's up, buddy?
How you doing, guys?
Oh, better now that you're here, man.
I know, so, me too.
By the way, where did you guys end up going the other night when you asked me for recommendations?
We ended up just going to Real Sports.
Asked me for recommendations that weren't Real Sports.
Well, I know. Kyle Newbeck, who also covers the Sixers, and I were trying to find playoff games, and I was staying at the Delta down the street, and Kyle said, let's just go there. And I said, sure, the games will be on there. So we went there and watched games, so it was good.
Nice. Well, you also got to watch two Raptors 76ers games. Two pretty good ones, too.
Yes.
Joel Embiid obviously hits the big game winner in game three, and then the Raptors survive game four to extend this series out. Before we get into the specifics of the matchups, what is the latest on Joel Embiid's thumb?
I think it's going to be basically the same thing going forward, which is that he's got a torn ligament in his right shooting thumb. And while it's an injury he can play with in the series, it's certainly I think, going to make it difficult for him to grip the ball. You know, he talked after game four about having trouble rebounding. And I think if you watch that game, he only had, I think, five rebounds for basically the competitive portion of the game. And he'd had double-figure rebounds in, I believe, his last 15 games before that. So to me, that's the thing to watch for going forward in the series is how does Joel able to catch and control the ball, both in terms of passing and rebounding? Because if he's not quite at the same level with that going forward, that's certainly going to have a potentially big impact on the way the series shakes out.
So everything the Sixers have said is that rest won't really do much here. Like, he needs off-season surgery, and he just has to deal with it in the interim. But do you think that there's a little bit of additional urgency for Philly to get this series done just so, you know, those extra couple days of rehab and treatment ahead of a Miami Heat series where, let's be honest, it's the Miami Heat. That thumb might be targeted a little bit in that series.
I mean, look, I think there's urgency because if the Sixers lose this game, all of a sudden it's 3-2 in the series and you're going back to Toronto for game six. And so doubt is going to start to creep in here in Philadelphia about how the series is going to go. Right. I think, I mean, you're right about obviously every game you don't have to play in the playoffs is a win. I mean, look, we've seen over the past week, there's been, you know, between Fred and Devin Booker and Chris Middleton and Joel, like there's been a bunch of injuries, and obviously every extra game you have to play leaves open the possibility of somebody getting hurt. So, you know, getting out of the series quicker for them will be good on a few fronts, but I think the most important thing for them is to just get this thing over with and not have the, you know, the doubt start to creep in about could this thing possibly go the other way. Because if they lose this game and they've got 2 days to think about going back to Toronto for game six, I can guarantee you that's going to become the chatter that's going to start coming around this series if the Sixers can't close this thing out tonight.
It will also have meant a series that game by game nudged a little further in Toronto's direction, where game one's a blowout, game two's a little less of a blowout, game three's a buzzer beater, game four is a Toronto win, and then if Toronto takes game five on the road too, it's going to feel like it's all tilting that way. The big thing in game four that I saw, at least, was it looked like Philadelphia was pretty frustrated by the end of that one, and I know Joel Embiid's kind of the head of the snake with that kind of thing. Do you think that the Raptors' level of physicality has worn on the 76ers over the course of the series, or is it more a matter of, hey, the whistle's been inconsistent ref crew to ref crew, and that's just frustrating to figure out in general?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, Blake. I mean, certainly the Raptors play a swarming physical style of defense, but, I mean, look, in that game, the Raptors had more free throws than the Sixers. I think if either of us had I think both of us would have been surprised to have that happen in probably any game in this series. And certainly, you know, as you saw by Joel's, you know, golf clap on the way off and his comments after, he was pretty frustrated by it. And look, I think just in general, I mean, that it's a playoff series, right? You get to game four of the series and, you know, these teams, you know, have played a bunch in the regular season. They've obviously played now four times in the playoffs. Toronto is an aggressive defensive team. They're not a very fun team to play. You know, Philly is certainly an aggressive team trying to get to the foul line. They're not necessarily a fun team to play. So I think there's a lot of natural chippiness in the series as a result of that. And I think, you know, it's really more just a product of this is just naturally how a playoff series goes as it extends farther and farther along, as opposed to any specific thing that, you know, one team or the other has done to the opposite side.
Which is great. It's why a longer series is always a lot of fun. And you'd prefer it to have gone 2-1 instead of 3-0 because, you know, at least until this thing gets back to Toronto, if it does, the conversation is going to be, well, no one comes back from 3-0. No one comes back from 3-0.
Right.
A big factor tonight for the Raptors is obviously going to be the status of Fred VanVleet. So at latest update, Fred VanVleet is questionable with a hip flexor strain. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of pain tolerance and see how the inflammation goes. Did you get a sense from being a little closer to the team? You get the fancy ESPN seats. I'm way up in the gondola. did you get a sense of the likelihood of Fred playing tonight? And, you know, if he can't go, how does that change your opinion on the chances of this coming back to Toronto Thursday?
I mean, I'm a little hesitant to bet against Fred because he's such a tough guy, and I know he's going to want to play, but to me, his reaction when he ripped his jersey in half and walked off the court the other day, like, that didn't look like a guy who thought he could keep going, right? And I think it's going to be hard, I think, for him to be able to play, I would guess, on that thing. Now, that's strictly just a guess on my part. You know, Fred certainly, if he decides to play today, I won't be shocked just because he, you know, tries to play through everything. But look, I think if Fred is out there, obviously he's Toronto's best three-point shooter and their most dynamic perimeter threat. So that gives the Sixers defense a different thing to look at. I think if he's not out there, you're probably going to see what Toronto did in the second half, which is essentially play Scottie Barnes at point guard and just go huge across the board and just really try to hammer the glass. And I think when we go back to what we talked about at the beginning with Joel's thumb, if he's not really able to control the glass like he could in the first three games, and you have, you know, Scottie and Precious Achiuwa and Kem Birch and Pascal and OG and all these guys flying at the rim trying to get offensive rebounds, that could be a situation that allows Toronto to, you know, play volleyball off the glass a lot like they did throughout the season and generate a bunch of extra shot opportunities. So, you know, I think you're probably going to see, you know, one of those two scenarios play out. Like I said, if I had to guess, I would guess Fred doesn't play. I mean, we'll see what happens here at shoot around a little bit. But, you know, I think those are probably the two avenues Toronto will go down depending on whether he's available or not.
Yeah, I think that two things can be true here, which is that you're not as good without Fred VanVleet. That's pretty clear, but it's not the best matchup for him. And if you just looked at Toronto's deployment of going with that lineup that you just mentioned, like, it has worked for them. So it's weird thinking about expectations for a rookie, and especially somebody that's coming off of an injury like Scottie Barnes did, right? He's all over the glass in that past game. He gave him 11 rebounds. He can handle the rock, but 1 of 6 from the field, a pretty big departure from where he was at in game one, where he looked like he was going to be the team's best player. What do you think that they need from him tonight, if especially there's no Fred?
Well, they're going to need him to score. I mean, I think that's the difference, right? Like you said, he did a lot of things well in game four, but if Fred's not out there, I mean, look, we all knew coming into this series, Toronto's biggest issue was going to be offense, and specifically half-court offense, right? And the Raptors have done okay in that respect in the series so far, but if they're going to win a game on the road, they're going to need some offensive production that they haven't gotten so far in the series. They're going to need, you know, they're either going to need, you know, Fred to play and get going. They're going to need Scottie to, you know, have something closer to the 15 points he had in game one. They're going to need Pascal to play well in this game. They're probably going to need guys like, you know, they're going to need Gary Trent, you know, who's been huge in games 3 and 4 to continue to play well. Now that he's gotten over his illness and looks back to normal, you know, going to need guys like Precious Achiuwa to come off the bench and make shots. I mean, you know, especially if Fred can't play, they're going to need a lot of guys to step up and make a lot of plays on offense, because that is where the Raptors will win or lose the game. If they, you know, Philly, you know, is probably going to hit some shots at home, I would think. The crowd is going to be into it. You know, it's going to be a tough place to play. And we saw in those first two games, the Sixers got out and ran. They got in transition. They got some open three-point looks early, got a good head of steam. So, to me, the Raptors need to, you know, kind of weather that early storm. And then, like I said, whether they have Fred or not, they're going to have to score. And to your point, Scottie, certainly if he looks closer to what he did in game one than game four, the offensive end of the court, that would be a very big boost to their chances.
Let's assume Fred doesn't play, and you look at the Raptors' rotation options here, and I think back to the 2019 series with Philly, where Nick Nurse basically ran a six-man rotation with the occasional Fred and Norm cameo, and you know, they were playing at that point. It seemed bizarre to be playing Ibaka and Gasol together. And now if they were on this roster, like, Gasol and Ibaka might be like the 2 and the 3 for Nick Nurse. do you see him turning to Malachi Flynn again? Or is this, hey, the rotation shrinks and it's going to be pieced together with Scottie and Pascal, and to a lesser extent, maybe Thad handling the ball? Like, can you go to Malachi Flynn in a spot like this?
My guess is Nick will do what he normally does, which is he'll probably try somebody like Malachi for a couple minutes. And if it goes well, he might get more run. And if he doesn't, it'll end quick. Right. I mean, that's my guess. Like, he tends to give guys a chance, and if they play well, they get some more run. And if they don't, it ends fast. And I think that's probably the way you go here. I mean, my guess is, I mean, you know, obviously he tends to run shorter rotations anyway. My guess is it will be pretty tight in game five, whether Fred plays or not. But, you know, with the way they play, the Raptors do foul a lot. They do get into foul trouble. They're probably going to have to play a couple more guys. And Malachi played well enough in game four that I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a chance. But certainly, I think it will be a very short leash if he does.
Yeah, I think, you know, that game two, he did a decent job on Maxi as far as, you know, what Raptors have a prayer against Maxi. Maxi cooled off in game four a little bit. We were speaking to Malcolm Miller earlier about, you know, how role players are, or I guess Maxi's ascended beyond role player. They do better at home than on the road sometimes because of familiarity, because of the Nets, whatever, the crowd. What do you see on the Philly side in terms of role player usage in this one? Because they've had to rely on George Niang a lot more these last couple games because they didn't have Matisse Thybulle. Obviously, Thybulle introduces some difficult offensive things. How do you see that shaking out? Like, I could see a scenario where Doc's like, well, Thybulle's a break glass in case of emergency because we just played two games without him. But also, those two games were much less effective than the two Thybulle played, even though he didn't play a huge role.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to play his 15 minutes or so again. I mean, I think the thing I would say for the Sixers on that front, Blake, is that, you know, role players tend to shoot better at home, right? And that I think is what's really going to determine how this goes. If Shake Milton and George Niang and these guys come off the bench and hit threes, I think the Sixers will probably win big, right? If they get sort of like game one and two, you know, even though the Raptors were more competitive in game two, if the Sixers get out in front and make some shots early and build a lead, they're a really good front-running team. James Harden in particular is a really good front-running player. Like when he gets going and in a rhythm, he's very, very hard to stop. And you saw, especially in that game two, the game turned at the start of the second quarter when James was diming up Niang and those guys in the corners for three, and the Raptors were helping off him on his drives. So to me, you know, Matisse is going to play. He'll get some defensive assignments. They'll hope he hits a three or two that he gets. But it'll probably be a non-factor on offense. And then they're going to need, you know, Niang and some of these other guys to step up and make some shots for them. Because if they don't make shots, you know, and Toronto does get a lead, you know, that's when the crowd here is going to start to get a little tight. Everybody's going to start going, oh, no, here we go again with another collapse in the playoffs. And, you know, everybody's going to tense up a bit, and it'll get difficult for the home team. So I think in particular, you know, the role players of Philly need to get off to a good start. And I think that the energy in the building needs to be good, because if that happens, I think this could be a 25-point win and Philly celebrating and going to the second round. And I think if it's a close game at halftime and the Raptors can hang around and make people here think about what might happen, then I think all of a sudden it could get a lot more interesting as the game wears on.
Yeah, man, massive stakes tonight. Coach that loses ends up coaching the Lakers next year. Like, that's basically the way that maybe we're looking at this. So before we let you go, and I know that these series are head-to-head, so maybe you haven't had as much of an opportunity to watch the Nets-Celtics as you would have liked, but what is your thought on Kevin Durant's performance in this series? Again, a guy that's going to be turning 34 next year, and who has, I think, only 11 shots in his last game.
I mean, look, I think that series has gone pretty much the way I expected it to. I didn't necessarily expect a sweep, but I thought the Celtics were the far superior team, and they have played like the far superior team because they are the far superior team because they have more than two players who are good, which is basically what the Nets have at this point. And Kevin Durant looks like a player that is extremely tired. He's played over 40 minutes a game, virtually every game since he came back from his knee injury 4 or 6 weeks ago. He just looks very worn out, understandably so. And the Celtics might have the best defense I've ever seen. So when you have a team that is as long and physical and aggressive as Boston is and can be in Kevin Durant's airspace every second he's on the court, there's a mental fatigue there that weighs in over time. And you couple that with the physical fatigue, and you couple that with the demands that are being placed on him and on Kyrie Irving because of the lack of a coherent supporting cast around them. You know, this team has several centers on its roster in a series where they can't really play any of them. They have all these 6'2 guards that can't guard anyone. So they're having trouble getting physically overwhelmed at the other end of the court. So I think you factor all that together, and it's why I thought Boston would win the series. And look, I said after game one, Kyrie Irving had a fantastic game one, hit all these amazing tough shots, looked like the best player on the planet. There was no way he was going to do that 7 games in a row. And they were going to need him to do that 4 or 5 games in the series to win the series. And the way Kyrie plays, he takes incredibly hard shots. And when they go in, he looks great. And when they don't, he looks pretty pedestrian because he's not playing defense and he's not really moving the ball. And in games 2 and 3, he looked pretty pedestrian. So we'll see what happens tonight in game 4. Obviously, no Ben Simmons is a blow to them. They were expecting him to play. But ultimately, I just think the Celtics are the far, far superior team. And frankly, I expect them to win again tonight.
Tim, the Simmons thing, is that he woke up with a sore back, or is that he woke up and they were down 3-0 and it's not really worth rushing it back?
We know what that
is. Yeah, but I want Tim to
honestly,
say it.
I honestly have no idea what's gone on there. I mean, that's one of the stranger – the whole Ben Simmons thing this year has been certainly one of the stranger stories we've ever seen. But to be totally candid, I don't think it would have mattered if Ben Simmons played in the series or not. I mean, unless he was playing 35 minutes a game and was back to – the guy who was a borderline defensive player of the year candidate last year. I just don't think he was going to make much of an impact. I mean, the Nets have too many flaws. I had to keep hearing all year about how this team was so dangerous and so good and was going to be such a force. And they never had a chance to be better than this. So, you know, Ben Simmons fully healthy, Joe Harris fully healthy. Yeah. We can have a different conversation about the Nets, but Joe Harris not playing, Ben Simmons playing 10 minutes off the bench, that wasn't changing how this series was going to go one way or the other, in my opinion.
I don't know, man. A team with Bruce Brown as their number 3 scoring threat? That's
Bruce Brown having to shoot 20 times a game is a good example of why the Nets are in the position they're in.
All right. Tim Bontemps, NBA writer at ESPN. And, you'll be with the Raptors and 76ers the rest of this way. And then moving on beyond that. We'll see. Maybe we'll see you here Thursday for a game 6. I hope so. I don't know if your travel schedule hopes so, but hope to see you, buddy. Thanks for taking the time this morning.
I'm always happy to be in Toronto, Blake. I'll talk to you soon.
Tim Bontemps, ESPN, the NBA stock report on YouTube. Not willing to say that Ben Simmons, it's the 3-0 deficit that hurt his back. Okay.
Yeah. We'll close on a Raptors thought, but I just need to say that I get that the Nets don't have a lot of depth, but when you build a team that's Kyrie and KD, and then you trade for James Harden, that's what the deal is. Like, those guys try to be like, we don't have enough support. It's like, shut up. 0% chance do you get to have this as a lever that you get to pull as an excuse? Like, no. When you make the superstar team, you lose the depth. That's the deal. It's a salary cap league. It's not Major League Baseball. You're not the Yankees.
Did you think that the buyout point guard who didn't play all year while he sat in Miami on the Raptors roster was going to be your fifth best player, because that's what you're playing him like?
Exactly.
How much? And I know that the Ben Simmons thing didn't go exactly how they thought, but like, you knew Joe Harris was going to be out. You knew Bruce Brown can't carry. I mean, he has carried a scoring load in this series, but you don't want that a lot. Seth Curry entered the postseason not in the best of ways. And I don't know why Patty Mills isn't playing more, but he hasn't really shot much in the series. It's just like your margin for error when you build a star-heavy team. Like, every star-heavy team knows this. It's why you've got to hit on things like lower picks or, you know, mid-level guys or even minimum guys, is you can't have guys on the roster that you can't use.
Like, and I got to tell you, too, like, they don't have that obvious number 3 scorer right now with Seth not at 100% or with Bruce Brown doing this, but Drummond has been good for them. Claxton has been good for them. Like, they haven't been, oh my God, they can't find a body to play for these guys. Like, they've gotten good minutes from a lot of different players on this team. And so the idea that this is some kind of a, like, shift the blame to the role player series is no. That this is some kind of a shift the blame to Ben Simmons didn't play in game 4 when you're down 0-3 when he's the biggest loser in NBA history is like, no. Like, that's
even
not what happens.
Seth and Patty Mills haven't been amazing. But Seth, Patty Mills, and Bruce Brown have combined to go 19 of 35 on threes.
Exactly.
You're not – I don't care who – like, drop Joe Harris in for Bruce Brown. You still don't expect your guys to shoot over 50% on over 10 three-point attempts a game as support players. No, this falls on
– this is on Durant.
Yeah, and like, you could put some of it on – Kyrie had a really – poor game 2 and game 3.
Sure, but at least he had one good game. Durant has yet to have a game.
Reasonable criticism of Steve Nash as well. But yeah, Kevin Durant's supposed to be the best scorer in the world. And I'd still, over a long sample, pick him as probably the best scorer in the world. he has not scored like the best scorer in the world in this series, and it hasn't been particularly close. So maybe you get that tonight. I don't know. At least, this series being 3-0 and not being as interesting as we thought, at least it's less stressful to do the Celtics, Nets, Raptors, 76ers juggle tonight with the overlap start time.
So you know that I've been trying to stay away from other people's narratives. Like, I don't like to listen to other shows the week of, and I don't like to listen or watch other sports shows or anything like that. I like to try to keep it fresh and clean. But I would imagine that Nash is taking some heat right now, right?
Like, he has.
Okay, because I was going to say that that's the thing I didn't want to say, is that he has not made an adjustment the entire round. Like, he's like, why don't we just keep trying the same exact thing? And Boston's like, we have an answer for that. We've already shown you that we have an answer for that. And Nash is like, but what if we just keep doing it? It's very strange that a guy who was so good in his career at getting other people involved hasn't been able to figure out how to get two of the best offensive players in NBA's history
involved. And the question would be, is that fully a Steve Nash thing, or is this KD and Kyrie are kind of dictating the strategy there? And that's a bigger question on its own. And then I'll just say this, and producer Daniele can speak to this. If Steve Nash is going to agree to come on the radio show once he's no longer the coach of the Brooklyn Nets, no blame falls on Steve Nash. If he's going to come on, or if he's not going to come on with us, then, you know, Steve Nash has had a bad series.
Just when Nash was hired in that job, a lot of people thought that he was there to be the personality manager of the room.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how he looks right now, because tactically he's getting absolutely killed. Okay, so Raptors thoughts tonight, tactics. What do you do? How do you change things up? For me, I want to see a lot of Scottie Barnes and Siakam, those two guys taking turns bombing to the rim all game long. Those two guys all game long, pressure on the rim, pressure on the rim, pressure on the rim. OG Anunoby, Gary Trent Jr. knocking down shots from the perimeter when they get those opportunities, and then continue the doubling Joel Embiid, trying to not let him deep post position. It seems obvious, but it's like, duh. When you get him outside of the block, that's when you force those doubles where he has to throw those hard passes. When he gets deep, you're going to have to foul him, and he's going to get those easy bunnies. So, sounds easier said than done, but like, those are the keys to the game for me tonight.
Three things. I loved your take on how tonight's game is big for Gary Trent. Obviously, Pascal first, but Gary Trent's got to have one hell of a game as well. I think, secondly, if the whistles are bad, you got to find a way through it. You can't let that get the distraction of that. Yep. It's not going to be.
Can't collapse.
No, yeah, you can't let that be the determining factor to why the Raptors lose. You got to find a way. It's the playoffs. It's gritty. You know you're going to go into an away barn, and it's not going to be favorable. So find a way to let that not bother you, opposite of what Embiid did on Saturday. And I think that is the biggest secondary factor that you can't control. So yep. Find that leadership, find that mentality, that toughness, and play through it. And like, if you can do both those things, you have a good chance.
There's been two crybaby ref games, and both teams that have been crying to the refs lost.
So
Raptors game
no
one,
crying.
Sixers game four. Mm-hmm. Two crybaby ref games, and both those teams ended up quitting down the stretch.
No crying, that's for sure. And the other thing I'd say, and this isn't related to the whistle, but it could be related to the whistle. If you're the Raptors, you got to weather that early storm. If Philly has any backbone to this team and this roster, Doc Rivers has any punch in that locker room, they're going to come out looking to end it immediately. And like Tim said, they're a front runner team, and that means a lot of things in terms of how you play with the lead and stuff like that. But they're also a front runner team mentally, right? Like we teed this series up as if you punch Philly in the mouth, they are combustible. And then the first two games were way too easy on them. And then look at what happened once things got stressful and once things got difficult. They became the team whining about the refs. They became the team unable to handle the physicality and getting fewer loose balls and stuff like that. You gotta be able to parry it and counterpunch if they come out really, really hot to start the game. That's it for today. The Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a follow on socials. All that great stuff. You got Raptors 76ers Game 5. Tonight at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet. You got Jays Red Sox at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Enjoy all that stuff, and we will talk to you right back here tomorrow at 6.